Welcome to episode 4 of Dart Star Astrology Podcast. This is Marina Caruso speaking to you from London Town. Welcome to the show. This is going to be just a short fill-in episode, really. We'll just do the astrological weather, and we'll also look at take our trip through the ecliptic like we always do, and have a look at how it looks through the constellations. There'll be no moon this week because, well, there isn't one, and I think we've had our fill of eclipses and lunations and what have you over the last, 3 episodes, really, and last week was obviously the big special. So no more moons this week anyway, and we'll just concentrate on all the other planets. And also what's going on the website as well. I did a post on Regulus a couple of weeks ago now, but we didn't time to talk about that last week. And I've also done a post on psychopaths and what astrological indicators might show one as well. So I'll talk about that later. But first of all, we'll look at the weather. So the celestial weather, we have the sun in the middle of constellation Gemini. But the big aspect for today, on Sunday the 3rd of July, is the sun is square Saturn. So this presents some challenge or test to overcome, to remove the blockages to progress, and also a time for releasing any fears or guilt. Because the sun is in Gemini, in the constellation Gemini, something good to do when the sun is in Gemini and it's square Saturn would probably be organising stuff, doing things like accounts or something that's a bit boring, but it'll take your mind off any negative stuff and just get something that's really boring and domestic out of the way, like writing lists, organising stuff, really. That's probably the best way to channel that. Well, tomorrow is Monday the 4th of July, Independence Day for you Americans. What a romantic day that's going to be. It's Venus trine Neptune, and just a nice lazy transit, really, romantic, dreamy. Good for just vegging in front of a romantic film with a box of chocolates, or if it's a nice day, I would have a smoochy picnic with me husband or lover, in front of a castle, something like that, something romantic, and or just listen to music, chill, and let your sort of imagination take you somewhere else. Venus on that day will just be coming up to the foot of Castor, the twins, so again, nice time for fun and frolicking. The twins can are very sort of boisterous, and they like to sort of frolic in the hay. So again, that does make me think that Monday is a very good time for being outdoorsy and having picnics and that kind of stuff. On Tuesday the 5th of July, Mercury is trine Uranus. So that's very sparky for ideas, should increase mental awareness and intuition. And you also, I just got an email to go with the Mercury trine Uranus, isn't that nice? You may also get some unexpected good news as well. Later on that day, in the evening in England, it will be Mercury square Jupiter, which goes, you know, follows on from the Mercury trine Uranus. So that's because really the higher mental alertness and the awareness of Uranus will overcome any tendency to overlook details which comes from the square to Jupiter. So it should be favourable for making informed decisions and doing business. And the square will give the push needed to reach a deal for a win-win result. So Tuesday looks very good for business and thinking and sorting stuff out. Mercury, as far as visual astrology goes, is going to be, well, it's actually in the middle of, it will be in the middle of the crab of Cancer. So this is quite a good time also for getting in touch with your ancestors. You may feel like listen out for messages from them. Your spirit guides, you might have an old granny who's a spirit guide, so she might have something to tell you on that Tuesday. And also maybe just news from family that are far away, like abroad, if you've got family in other countries, a good time to get in touch with those as well. And maybe the unexpected good news could be from a family member as well. On Wednesday, the 6th of July, Mars will be trine Saturn, which is great for work. Means determined and driven hard work to achieve a goal. This could be a long-term goal which you've been patiently working towards over the last month. And as Mars is on the same degree as the June the 1st solar eclipse, it's also on the Archangel Michael star Aldebaran, which I found was really about building a fairer system and restructuring things to include everybody, and doing things with integrity. My feeling is now that Mars has gone past the sort of more impulsive and passionate stars of Taurus. It's now working its way. It's basically on the top of the head of the bull now. I think it's going to be a lot less rash, and it'll be making more sensible and calmer decisions based on just being a bit more careful, really. So this is a very sensible, trustworthy, solid type of energy with Mars. So that anything that you start now or are working on now is probably going to be solid for years to come. So if you're going to have any work done in your teeth or something like that, I would book my dentist appointment for this day, because it's going to last. Thursday, the 7th of July, we get Jupiter trine Pluto. Yay! I mean, this is really the most important transit this month, and it's very positive. It's a large-scale reforming process of philosophical or belief systems. It's the first of three of these aspects between now and March 2012. So this is the time to think about how you can improve the conditions of your life aimed at personal and material growth. And this will also be occurring on the world stage through politics and global economy. On Friday, 8th of July, we have the first quarter moon at 15 Libra, which may bring some family concerns for the next week, really, as the sun is on the bright fixed star Canopus, which means with the sun it does mean domestic affliction and trouble with father or parents. The sun is actually, if you look in the sky, it'll be on the ecliptic, it's still in the middle of Gemini, but the star that it's actually aligned with is Canopus. That's the closest one. So they do say with the sun it does bring this as well. So just watch out for maybe there could be some sibling rivalry which fuels things or aggravates things with parents. I don't know. Could be that, maybe. Then finally, the last one of the week is Saturday, July the 9th. Which looks like a really good day for a party, especially if you want to get people together, do some matchmaking, because we get Venus opposite Pluto first of all, which is going to bring up intense and even obsessive feelings in love relationships. But these are helped along with Venus sextile Jupiter. So that's definitely a good day for trying your luck with someone you have strong feelings for. And if you're to give a party, I would say everyone would be really inclined to dress up in their finery and parade themselves, because Venus is very near, it's coming up to Alhina, and being conjunct Alhina brings material concerns. So you're going to want to sort of look nice and dress up, and gives a love of dress, pleasure and flattery, artistic and musical ability. So I think that would be a perfect day to throw a lavish party. Tell everyone to dress up to the nines, because they'll be in the mood for it. If you put out the food, they will eat all of it, because it'll be they'll just be in the mood for indulging. And also the matchmaking, put some smoochy music on. Perfect. Yes, Saturday is the day for getting out the Barry White for sure. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I did a feature on Regulus, the fixed star Regulus. It's now on page 2 of our website, so if you want to go to page 2 and find out a bit more about it, you can. The reason I wrote it was because Regulus has been in Leo, the constellation Leo, obviously. It's the heart of the lion, and it's the main star of Leo. But it's just about to move into Virgo, and people have been speculating as to what this means, and some people have been saying that they think it heralds the age of Aquarius. Well, presumably this is because Leo is opposite Aquarius in the fixed signs, and it might be something to do with that. But really, if you're a sidereal astrologer, well, it's not going anywhere. It's not moving into Virgo at all. Regulus is in Leo, and it'll always be in Leo. So, but it is moving its coordinates. That's all it's doing. I don't think it's going anywhere. But the thing is, of course, we have symbolism in astrology. So I'm willing to take on board that there may be some sort of shift in perception of the star Regulus, but I don't think you can say that it's moving into Virgo, because it's impossible for it to do that. What they're really doing, it's the Earth that's moving, it's the Earth that's wobbling, and its precession is caused by the Earth's wobble. So really, it's our perception is shifting. So maybe we can say that we are looking at Leo in a different way, or looking at Regulus in a different way, because he's moved into the territory, or appears to be moving into the territory of the Virgin. Is it now, if we're going to say this is the age of Aquarius, maybe this is Leo putting aside its ego and becoming more sort of respectful of the Earth, as Virgo is, because Virgo really is Ceres, is the sprig of wheat that she's holding. So it could be putting aside ego and personal glory to become more protective of the Earth, which is more Aquarian, a more humanitarian perspective, rather than look at me, I'm the king, and ego of Leo. Which isn't a bad thing, by the way. I'm not slagging off the ability to love yourself, because it's important to own your own sovereignty by doing that and having a strong ego. So there's a lot that Leo can teach Aquarius. So I was quite fascinated to research Regulus because, well, I mean, I've got a stellium in Aquarius, so it's my opposite number, and I do find it quite fascinating. Regulus as a fixed star is one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. It's one of the royal stars. They're basically the four archangels, and they govern the four directions as well. So you often see it on the tarot cards. If you look at the Wheel of Fortune and the World cards, you will see a bull, a lion, an eagle, and a human, which are the signs of Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius. So this is what's fueling some speculation about, you know, 2012, whether it's the end of the world, or is it enlightenment, and all that kind of stuff. I think something important is happening with a sort of shift in consciousness, but I certainly don't think it's the end of the world, really. And I don't think the poles are going to shift or anything big like that. But there are, you know, without a doubt, there are some interesting things that are coincidentally happening around 2012. But I don't think we're all going to be dust then. So let's just talk about Regulus as Regulus. His degree is 29 degrees Leo, as I've said. So anybody who has their sun or any planets around there, I would give it an orb of 3 degrees either side. So, anything between 26 and 3 degrees Virgo is going to be affected by Regulus. Now, the characteristics of Regulus really are, I mean, he is the superstar of the fixed stars, really. I mean, he is the Elvis. He ranks as ultra, ultra fortunate, the most benefic star in the universe. Medieval astrologers said it would bring glory, riches and fame to all those born under it. And it does give you immense power, but I think it comes with a price. Bernadette Brady says that its nemesis is that if you stoop to ever using your Regulus power for revenge, then you'll suffer a great downfall. I don't know about the revenge part, but I did witness the falling from grace aspect, certainly with some of the celebrities who have this. And because this star has got Mars, it has got the Mars and Jupiter nature, it really does take you far and it can make you extremely successful. But I mean, I think the main thing is, you know, if you do display excess pride and your ego becomes the size of the street, and you become arrogant and obsessive at conquering, which does tend to happen, then people will want to bring you down. They will just do. It's just nature's law. So, I came up with some Regulus keywords. Brave, bloodthirsty, gutsy, ambitious, driven, unstoppable, proud, pompous, majestic, magical, because they have a ability to prophesy as well, vain, arrogant, egotistical, regal, loyal, poised, flamboyant, dashing, fabulous, flash, outrageous, chivalrous, and it sort of just goes on and on. But they can, they're naughty and playful and flirty, but they can also, the negative sides, they can be quite unhinged and they are predatory. Remember, this is a man-eater. So they can be quite stalker-like in the way that they pursue their romantic interests. So I think the tendency to stalk its prey is the characteristic that separates Regulus from general Leo characteristics. Leo, I think, is a lot more just romantic and a sort of softer version than Regulus. Regulus is really quite harsh and obsessive, and it has a gutsy side to it and is more animalistic as well. Now, some stars who have Regulus prominent, the main one is Jackie Kennedy, who had it on her MC. Obviously she really did have the sort of regalness of this, and she did exude bravery and loyalty. When John Kennedy was shot, interestingly, she refused to remove her bloodstained pink Chanel suit, and even said that she regretted washing her bloodstained face and hands. She was quoted as saying, "I want them to see what they have done to Jack." You know, just blood and guts, really, which is very much very key to Regulus. You know, it doesn't mind getting blood on its hands at all. So it can be glamorous and it can be shimmering, but it also has a gutsy side as well. Now, Elton John has Regulus rising. If we go with the chart that we have on Solarfire, well, he certainly embodies the flamboyant side of Leo, doesn't he? And also, by royal appointment, I mean, he played at Princess Diana's funeral as well. And, of course, he wrote the musical score to The Lion King, so you can't get any more Leo than that, can you? And, of course, he's famous for his diva-like behaviour too. Queen of the Brothels, Cynthia Payne, had Regulus rising. And she was the madame who made a mint hosting sex parties. And she had a lot of Regulus type clientele, actually. You know, judges, very high profile people in there. Margaret Thatcher had Regulus on the moon. And, of of course, she suffered her famous Regulus downfall in 1990 when she was hounded out of office. But before that, as far as strong leadership and strong Regulus leadership, you couldn't really... I can't think of anyone who epitomises that better. So if you want to go to page 2 of the website, you'll also see there's a load of examples of celebrities that have Regulus Ascendant, Midheaven, Sun, Moon, Mercury, all the personal planets, and you'll get to see. So if you've got any personal planets on Regulus, you'll be able to compare and contrast. The other post that features this week, this is on the front page, is the astrology of a psychopath. What I found interesting is that they're actually more common than we think, and what you define as a psychopath doesn't necessarily have to be a serial killer or a paedophile or a rapist or anything so extreme. Mostly, they will be someone you probably have no idea that they are a psychopath at all, because they're fantastically charming. And these are the sort of people who are con men and women. They tend to live off other people. They tend to be plagiarists. They tend to love people and leave them as well. If you've been in a relationship with a psychopath, then this would have been the one that would have dragged you through hell and back, really. And just puzzled you completely by their behaviour, and probably left you thinking it was your fault, because that's what they can do very well. Now, these are the traits of a psychopath. They are a parasitic lifestyle. They have no remorse. They have no empathy. They're constantly blaming others for their misfortune. They tend to react emotionally over the top and out of all proportion to the event. They blow hot and cold. They're constantly lying and crying wolf. They usually have either an abnormally high sex drive or low sex drive. They think the world owes them a living. The main thing is that there's this kind of poor me syndrome where they use emotional blackmail so much. Like, there's always some excuse, or I came from a really bad family, and they pull this kind of sweet, innocent, charming little girl or even lost boy sort of Peter Pan act that makes you think, oh, I can save you, poor dear, you've had such a terrible life, I can make it all better. And it's just fake. It is just fake. And the trouble is also is that they can't be cured. It is a brain deficiency. You can see this under an MRI scan. But the people that you really need to check out, you know, you can't prove this because they're never going to go and get an MRI scan. Mainly the people that have had this done are the violent criminals in prisons where they've been sort of forced to do it and put under some sort of study. But the ones in your everyday life, we don't get to see this. So you just have to kind of suss them out by looking up, well, just knowing what the traits are, and then see if they're pulling the wool over your eyes, really. Now, before I read these aspects out and you start thinking, oh my God, I've got that, I must be a psychopath. No, you probably, most probably aren't at all. But there is a good chance that you might attract them into your life because of that. You might just have a sprinkling of these. You might just have one of these, which is actually a gift, and you do need these to suss out the real psychopaths. And then you can use those weapons to protect yourself from them and also to defeat them, really. Now, the orbs I give to these are very tight. For the Sun and the Moon, not more than 6, but generally I found that they were more tight. They were sort of up to about 3. For the other planets, well, really 2 to 3. So that's my orbs, but they are tighter than most people's. And these I noted down from a database of about 50 psychopaths that I had in Solar Fire, male and female, not just men. And the aspects I noted were conjunction, opposition, trine, sextile, Quincunx and Semisextile. Those are the ones I use. And that was it. So any connection that way. I don't use the quintile or sesquiquadrate or the semisquare. So I didn't look at those. So number one was Moon Pluto. That was the highest scorer. Then Black Moon Lilith aspecting the ascendant. Mainly the trine and the conjunction. Interesting that it's a trine, because I would say that is really about them being charming and being able to manipulate and mesmerise and hypnotise as well, because it's bewitching. Black Moon Lilith is the power to bewitch. And interestingly, I was expecting to see the most evil in Lilith Pluto. You know, you'd imagine, you know, the Lord of Darkness and the bad girl put together must be really, really evil. But no, actually, the highest scorer was Lilith with Venus, which just makes me think, oh God, you know, that's utter charm, isn't it? After that, it was Lilith with Eris again, and then the Sun, then the Moon, Mars, Uranus, Saturn, Pluto, and finally Ceres in that order. So, yes, Lilith with Venus, charm offensive there. Then an interesting one that I wasn't expected was Mercury in aspect to Ceres. And then another sign is an unexpected Sun, which is probably because the psychopath just doesn't know themselves. They're far more lunar. They run on instinct, but a real sort of predatory, primitive brain, which works totally on instinct. I mean, we say instincts are good, but it's very primal with them, very primal. So they don't really, they're not logical. They don't think in a logical way, but they're very clever. So it's hard to define really their sort of intelligence, but I do see it being interesting that the Moon seems to be their big, it seems to rule their chart a lot more than the Sun does. It makes me think of the Dracula film with Gary Oldman when he's going on about the creatures of the night. So it does make sense that they are creatures of the night, mysterious and, you know, scary darkness monsters. But they don't have a centre, they don't have a strong ego. So they sort of build up a false ego instead, which is actually really unhealthy and more dangerous than someone with a very strong ego. Because a really strong ego actually is a person who knows themselves, and then they're not so insecure that the only way they can feel power is by bullying and controlling. After that, we got Moon Eris, which is interesting because, again, it's similar to Moon Pluto. Eris is the goddess of the underworld and the outer planet version of Lilith and goddess of discord. And then after that was Moon Uranus, which can be really cutting yourself off from your feelings, being very cool and calculated as well. And those are the negative sides of Uranus. After that was Sun Pluto. Then we got Sun Uranus, which was interesting because they were all trines except for one square. So that could manifest the Uranus energy as a perfect robot, as a perfect killing machine, because emotions are just not going to get in the way, so be cool and calculated. As for the stars, well, I found that the top scorers were all in Scorpio. It's Lezath the Stinger in Scorpio, and the other two were Acrab and Juba, which are two stars in the forehead of Scorpio, and they're very close to the ecliptic as well. So these have got a big effect. Now, this is probably why the sign Scorpio has got such a fearsome reputation. You know, when people sort of go, oh, he's a Scorpio, you know, what am I going to do? But really, these stars are not in Scorpio. So anyone who has something at 3 or 4 Sagittarius, that is going to be Juba and or Acrab, because they're both together. Or if you've got anything at 24 Sagittarius, that is Lezath the Stinger. So they're the people that you have to be scared of if you're going to be scared of anyone. But really, if you do have these in your chart, don't get too worried about it. Like I said, they are very good as weaponry, and you can use these to defend yourselves against the real villains. You'll need them, you know, that they're a gift, not something to be afraid of. But I mean, if you have those and you have Algol and you have all the aspects that I've mentioned so far, then just go to a psychologist. But otherwise, I don't think you have anything to worry about. A few sort of spiky stars are good. You need them. After that, I found Pollux, which is the evil twin. So naturally, that would come up. Now, this one is at 23 degrees Cancer. Have a check if you've got that one. The next one was Algol, and that's at 26 Taurus, if you've got anything there. Then we have Antares, which is the heart of the scorpion, and that's at 9 degrees Sagittarius. Then Zosma, the tail of the lion, that's at 11 Virgo. After that, Fomalhaut, which is at the foot of Aquarius, and that's at 3 Pisces. So check if you've got anything there. And then just two more, Algarab the Crow, that's at 13 Libra, and Sabic in Ophiuchus, and that's at 17 Sagittarius. Then I go and talk about the psychopaths charts in detail. I've got Adolf Hitler in there and some serial killers and some female psychopaths as well. One thing that may strike you when you look at the charts is some of them are very powerful looking, and you can see that apparently Hitler and Gandhi's charts are very similar. I haven't looked at Gandhi's, but you can really see that depending on the soul evolution of the person that owns the chart, it's going to manifest in a very different way. So again, like I did say, if you have a chart that's similar to any of these, what you have to realize is that these people are at different stages of their soul's evolution. So a very primitive soul is going to exhibit a different characteristic of the chart, or the very lower emanations of the chart rather than the higher ones. So that's the funny thing with astrology. You have to really kind of, when you're reading a chart, you sort of get a feel maybe for the person. I don't know how you do this, actually. I've often wondered this myself, as when I'm reading a chart, how do I know that the person is an evolved person? Well, I kind of assume that if somebody comes for a reading, that they're wanting to evolve as a soul, and they're doing work on themselves. So therefore, I would assume the highest manifestation of the energies in the chart, and I would never say, oh, you're a druggie or you're an alcoholic. But I do sometimes say, oh, is there some drug taking in the family? Maybe it comes from a parent. Or are you attracting partners who could be manifesting the lower levels of your chart as well, and you're not seeing that some of this is inside of you as well? So there's all sorts of ways that these things come out, and it's very interesting to look at the extreme versions just to understand our own demons, because we all have our own demons inside of us. No, nobody's perfect. So I'll leave it there. The music, by the way, is when I myself was in a relationship that sort of mirrored some of these themes that I've been discussing. I recognised some traits in myself, and you know, you project it onto the other person and make them the baddie, but then they're there to sort of show you your own toxic elements of yourself that need flushing out too. So it was very cathartic for me to write all this stuff, and Jamie's been on at me to use my music rather than the boring classical stuff that he really doesn't like. But I've been kind of a bit shying away from it because, I don't know. I don't really want to blow my own trumpet in the musical sense. But it is copyright free, and so I might as well use it. Yeah. So here it is. Been listening to Marina Caruso for Dart Star Astrology Podcast. We have a website, it's dartstarastrology.com, and on there you can also find details of our readings. We do those as well. Okay then, I'll speak to you in a week's time now. Take care and goodbye.